Welcome to this segment of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now we're going to talk with Laura Hollis, who's a professor at Notre Dame Law School, and she's also a syndicated columnist. And in fact, she wrote a column recently, It's Time for Christians to Abandon Progressivism, or Is It Time? And so, Laura, welcome back to the program. Great to have you.
Thank you, Jerry. It's so nice to be back.
All right. Well, first of all, let's define what you mean by progressivism.
Well, when I'm talking about progressivism, it's a, you know, sort of a socio-political theory that really gained traction in the early part of the 20th century. And there is a strong correlation between progressivism and, you know, liberal Catholicism or liberal Christianity. In the early part of the 20th century, it was closely related with the labor movement, improvement for conditions for immigrants, for workers generally, for the poor. And so I think a lot of people still think of it that way 100 years later. And as I kind of allude to in my column, there is a fairly strong trend of that. I can speak more about Catholics than other Christians generally because that's my experience. But, you know, which says that really progressivism is much more in line with a Christian worldview than conservatism or other political viewpoints.
All right. Well, let's take an example from your own school, if I may. President Obama came to Notre Dame a few years ago, and there was quite a controversy about that. And I understand that some of the conservative groups that protested got in trouble for doing so.
I think there were, you know, the protests itself were fine. I think there were some people who were arrested because they were in places where they weren't supposed to be. I wasn't here then, so unfortunately I can't really comment about what happened, you know, from personal knowledge, but all subsequent charges against people were dropped by the university.
Hmm. But it does show kind of a microcosm of that. Now, in your column, you mentioned these Planned Parenthood video exposés, which, by the way, for the most part, it seems like liberals are dealing with it by ignoring those videos.
No question about it. And I think this is, you know, the connection that I'm trying to draw, that progressivism has a very sort of seamy underbelly. And so Margaret Sanger, who is the founder of Planned Parenthood, self-identified as a progressive. And so, you know, this was, in her view, one of the ways that you could improve society, which was to get rid of what she called human weeds. And in fact, she was actively engaging black pastors and others to try to push abortion, not only for blacks, of course, but for the poor, immigrants, minorities, the disabled, et cetera. And so it's, you know, maybe not ironic that, in fact, you know, we see this now, whatever, 80 years later, and Planned Parenthood has decimated the black population, whether by design or just by, you know, haphazard. This is completely inconsistent with Christianity and with the notion of the inherent value of every individual, regardless of your background or ethnicity or, you know, economic status.
Well, as a matter of fact, if you look even to this day at the location of a lot of the Planned Parenthood facilities, you see it really is in the poorer neighborhoods. I mean, that's just a fact.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, there are some black activists that have published this and say they demonstrate by showing maps that 80% of Planned Parenthood surgical facilities where they actually perform abortions are within walking distance of black and Hispanic communities. That's no accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like somebody said on the radio recently, you know, he was asking a question, you know, what is the leading cause of deaths of blacks in America? And all these people called up with all kinds of potential answers. Nope, 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 nope. And then the answer was abortion.
Yeah, I mean, blacks are approximately 12% of the population, but black women represent 35% of abortion patients.
Hmm.
That's staggering.
Yeah, that is staggering. Okay, now, comment specifically on this new wave of these Planned Parenthood videos, the exposés showing the basically the selling of baby body parts, the harvesting of baby body parts for profit, it would seem.
I think it's absolutely unsurprising given that, you know, what they've been doing. And in fact, this is the way they've tried to spin it. Well, you know, this is benefiting humanity. because these parts are going for scientific inquiry. That's Mendelian. I mean, really to suggest that, well, okay, you don't have any value as a human being, but since we're going to kill you anyway, we may as well harvest your parts. Mm. But it makes people incredibly uncomfortable. And, of course, if you look at the line that, Planned Parenthood and the National Boards Right, Abortion Rights Action League, et cetera, have taken for decades, it's been to deflect attention away from the humanity of the abortion victim, the babies. You know, it's just a blob of tissue. It's just a clump of cells. Well, blobs of tissue and cells don't have eyes and livers and gonads and all the other things that in these videos the Planned Parenthood operatives are bragging about selling and bragging about their video, which is why the media is not covering it, because there would be an enormous hue and cry. Planned Parenthood operates in a climate of ignorance.
Yeah. It's like darkness. They do best in darkness. And what these videos do is shine the light on what really happens there. And it's awful. It's just startling.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This week, I'm kind of doing a follow-up piece in which I'm saying, look, it's not just about abortion. Euthanasia is coming down the pipe. And I think people have to look at these trends. You know, so California's legislature has just passed the law. I don't think the governor has signed it yet. Legalizing assisted suicide. And so now we'd have five states, Oregon, Washington, Montana, Vermont, and California, if it gets signed, where assisted suicide will be legal. That too is being pushed as a liberty interest, a civil right, dignity, compassion, just as abortion was 50 years ago, you know, before it was legalized. And this is terribly concerning. Just this morning, I was reading an article about abuse of the practices of assisted suicide and euthanasia in the countries in Europe where it's been legalized, mm-hmm. Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. And Belgium now has a law that permits children under the age of 12 to request assisted suicide, which is insane. And I read that now they are harvesting body parts from euthanasia patients.
Oh.
I mean, this is where we're going.
Yeah, this is like, Frankenstein monsters or something. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with her, but there's a very, very famous lady in evangelical circles named Johnny, and she's been in a wheelchair since she was a teenager, and that was in the 1960s. But she's a great speaker, writer, and advocate for the handicapped, and she provides wheelchairs for third world countries and so forth. And after that story broke about a year ago about Belgium, about, you know, allowing children to be euthanized, she gave me a comment for our viewers and listeners, and she said, look, when I, you know, was first in my accident in 1968, I would have loved to have signed on for that. I would have loved to have, for them to have put me to death. And she said, but in retrospect, I'm so glad in the providence of God that that did not happen and that I've been alive all these years. And now she's married, and she's a tremendous inspiration to people. But this disappreciation of life from those who supposedly claim to trumpet a Christian view is just so wrongheaded.
And this is the inevitable trajectory for this. Once you start saying that there's classes of life that have value, that can be terminated if they're inconvenient, or if you're in the case of a suicide, you can decide that your own life has no more value, then it is inevitable that that's where it's going to go.
You're absolutely right. In fact, not to call anybody a Nazi, but if you just look at what the Nazis did, their goal was to create a master race. They didn't just kill Jews, but they did kill, obviously, 6 million Jews, and they killed 600,000 gypsies and hundreds of thousands of Slavs, all of which they deemed as subhuman.
And yet that's not where it started, Jerry, and I'm sure you know this, having studied it. They started with the disabled and children who had disabilities.
And adults.
And there was support for that initially.
Yep. Useless eaters. That's what they called them, useless eaters. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Well, you know, it's funny that some people would even claim to be Christian and would espouse any of these kinds of views. Where did they go wrong, those who claim to be Christian?
The argument always, and I've said this, you know, there's a strong university faculty for life chapter here at Notre Dame, and you know, we get together and we're talking about this. In fact, we're having a series of speakers on assisted suicide and euthanasia this year.
Good.
But I said the conversation around compassion gets co-opted, right? So Brittany Maynard has become the face of compassion for assisted suicide. And so the conversation gets turned, well, who are you to take your judgmental views and inflict suffering on someone? You know, so that's the way the conversation goes. And then people feel silenced because they say, well, gosh, that's terrible that Brittany Maynard had a brain tumor, and no, I don't want her to suffer. But people don't look at the path that, where this goes. First of all, they don't look at the data, right, that the vast majority of people, like the woman you mentioned, who at one point in time, either after a diagnosis or after an accident or if they're suffering from depression, claim to want, you know, euthanasia or assisted suicide, and yet if they're given proper treatment after time, certainly if they're depressed, if they get proper medication, that goes away in 90-something percent of the cases.
Wow.
So, you know, we should be saying, do we want to put a system in place where people fall through the cracks? And we're actually encouraged. I mean, it's gone well beyond terminally ill in Europe. It's now, you know, you're depressed, you don't think your life is worth living, you're over age 65, you know, all kinds of things. And importantly, you know, under European law in these countries, every single instance of euthanasia and assisted suicide is supposed to be reported. And they're not being reported, which also creates capabilities for abuse. Most disturbingly, we're arguing for this in this country at a time when the government is taking over more health care.
Mm-hmm.
That's a horrible prescription for abuse.
That really is, because, you know, when the government has more and more control of the health care, then ultimately that, you know, lends itself to rationing.
Look at the VA. They think 300,000 veterans died awaiting care. So if you are in line for government-provided health care and you're suffering, or you're old, or you're disabled, or there's some other thing where you think, well, I'm not going to get care, or there is the specter of ration, you know, I'm going to be denied care or pain treatment, then what becomes the next best option? Suicide. Euthanasia.
Really, a lot of these things that you're talking about, it boils down to what's your view of life. And the Judeo-Christian view is that God made human beings in his image. Therefore, we have special value. And that's the fountainhead of everything. If, on the other hand, you know, you believe that basically human beings are just the product of time and chance and, you know, different chemical processes over time, you know, as Rabbi Lappin puts it, you know, we go from the primordial slime to Bach and Beethoven, you know, just given enough time, just through random natural processes. But anyway, you know, that to me is a real watershed issue. You know, where do we ultimately come from? Where are we ultimately going?
And what is the source of our value? I do not decide what the value of my life is. I might have an opinion about it, but you know, as you mentioned, you know, being created in the image and likeness of God, it is God that gives us our value. We don't decide we have no value, therefore we don't. And yet that's the grounds for abortion as well. Well, you know, this pregnancy is inconvenient. I decide if my child has any value. I decide if this disabled person has any value. The doctor decides if this patient has any right to live. I mean, once you give other people that power, it is inevitable that it will be abused.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to say that, no, you know, there is a divine source of value and we
right.
don't dictate that, that cuts that off immediately.
Well, it's like the example of Shakespeare, Hamlet, the old to be or not to be. A lot of people don't realize it, but that's basically he's weighing the issue of suicide. Should I or should I not commit suicide? And he ultimately concludes he should not, because he says later in the play or in a different spot, oh, that the Almighty had not set his canon, that is his law, against self-slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, God has set his law against self-slaughter, then rats, I'm stuck in this situation. And but that's different than taking your own life.
And it's a natural impulse to want to live. And I think that's what we need to encourage. I mean, to say death with dignity, you know, there's dignity inherent in every human life. That doesn't mean that every situation is dignified necessarily, mm-hmm. but we can do a lot. We have a lot of power in order to assist people if they are, in fact, at the end stages of their lives, either because of illness, injury, et cetera, without, you know, saying as a society that, you know, we're going to move in the direction where, you know, people in huge numbers of categories have no value, and the best situation is to kill them.
Wow. Or to let them kill themselves, or let a doctor do
exactly.
it. Laura Hollis, thanks so much for being with us. Where can people read your work?
I can be read at WND.com. They publish my column on Fridays, and townhall.com publishes my column on Thursdays.
All right. Thank you very much. God bless and all the best.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.